woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Well, up next, Action Jax. That's tomorrow. He's Mr. Matt Weber with his assistant, Jake Silverman, on the board over there. S&P futures up 675. Dow futures up 55. NASDAQ futures up 23. It's today we're allegedly going to put more sanctions on Iran, although we're already... driving them pretty much into economic oblivion as we're trying to. We think somehow that's going to help. I'm not sure how that does help, but anywho, do we have Frank? We do not have Frank yet. Okay, we'll get him in a little bit. I was listening, Jack, to the various and sundry talk shows yesterday, and it's pretty interesting because when I was long time ago, when I ran for the board of the CBOE, two of us ran from the outside, and we ran as candidates that were not nominated by the nominating committee. So we ran from the outside, and the people who essentially backed us were the Independent Floor Members Association. So, you know, it was a little politics, a little local politics. And one thing that they wanted us to do is to take some media training in case this thing ever made it to the press, and we didn't. Two of us didn't sound like a couple idiots, which the first time I think you were ever interviewed, you probably would. And so we went to this thing, and there was a young lady who had been a anchor for some place, some smaller town, and she was given the courses. She had retired, had a family, and so forth, but she was pretty tough. And thank God she picked on the other guy and not me. It was my lucky day. So she immediately commenced an interview with the. Well, first they played the two examples of the worst interview and the best interview ever in like movies and TV, and one of them was Bob Newhart, who was a psychologist, and he gets on there and the lady's grilling him about. She goes, "No, just relax. Just talk about, you know, your business and so forth." And she says, "Well, like how much do you charge an hour?" And this is back, you know, hundreds of years ago. And he goes, "Well, like, you know, $25 an hour." "Oh, really? So how many times do people have to come before they're cured?" And he says, "Well, nobody's ever exactly cured. So let me get this straight. You charge $25 an hour and you've never cured anyone." You know, so, I mean, she absolutely was obliterating the poor guy. And because he hadn't prepared himself, basically. So the other one was when big old dumb Nuke LaRouche in Bull Durham comes on, but Kevin Costner had already prepped him with his cliches. And she says, "Oh, what are you thinking about the major leagues?" And he says, "Boy, is that you just change your hair, man? I love it like that." And she starts blushing. And then she says, "Well, you know, what do you have? I'm just happy to help the ball club. Whatever they want me to do, I'll do. I'm just happy to be here, taking it all in." And it was spectacular. Anyway, so the idea is that you, whenever you have a national exposure like that, you put down the five or six things you absolutely want to say. No matter what they ask you, they essentially, you give them one of those answers. "So, Chief, you're running for president. Frank, how are you?"
"I'm good. They're jamming your main phone number."
"Really? I wouldn't be a bit surprised."
I think you're under a cyber attack from somebody. I'm sure you're on multiple enemies.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Matter of fact, we have to get Matty Weber on and grill him in a minute about how how the cyber attack in Iran would take place, because we obviously have people doing this stuff, you know, all the time. So, as we accuse others. Anyway, I was talking about the Meet the Press and Face the Nation yesterday. So they have, and how when you take media training, they teach you to essentially write down the things you want to say and whatever they ask you. I mean, you don't ever not take an interview, because the exposure you're getting is so much money you could never pay for it. Like, nobody could actually pay for Sunday morning a half hour on network TV. So you better show up, right? But now you have your message to get across. So what you do is you write down, you can't say, chief, so you're running for president, how's your golf game? I mean, your comeback has got to be immediately, well, I don't have time to play golf these days because I'm worried about health care. You know, and you steer it right to what you want to talk about. And, you know, it takes obviously some practice. So Margaret Brennan has a couple guys on yesterday. I couldn't even tell the guy's voice. It turns out it was Mike Pence. Well, obviously you can take this to the extreme. You know, hey, I hear your wife died yesterday. Oh yeah, but I'm worried more about health. I mean, at some point you become a buffoon if you don't come close to answering the question. And Mike Pence went so far over that line yesterday, in my opinion. Anyway, so she's got these two guys on there, a Democrat guy who's on the Armed Services Committee and a Republican guy. They're on the same committee. And they're talking about the border stuff. Now, I guess Mike Pence wants us to believe, since we had Republicans in the Senate, House, and presidency for 2 years, and there was no immigration bill whatsoever, that it's all the Democrats' fault, because only the last 5 months they haven't got anything done. Well, in fact, it's been 2 years before that as well. And so I guess you're supposed to be stupid enough to not realize that of the 30 months Trump has been in office, he had the majority, 24 of those. You're not supposed to be able to count as an American. So anyway, but it was interesting because she's grilling the Democratic guy about, they claim that you won't sign a bill. And he says, well, I haven't seen a bill. And she says, well, would you sign it? He goes, I'm not going to say I'm going to sign it because I don't know what it is. She goes, would you sign a bill that you know, puts toothbrushes and places for people to sleep and essentially ups the funding, because it's the funding, I guess, is going to run out at the end of June. And the guy says, I'm not going to tell you I'm going to sign anything until I see what it is and I get a chance to read it. If they put a bunch of other crap in it, I'm not signing it, which to me makes perfect sense, I guess. So then they get this Republican guy in there, and he actually was fine, too. And he says, well, you know, we're trying to put bills in the Democrats, this and that. She goes, Let me help you. If somebody put through a bill that only dealt with the humanitarian stuff, there was a list of 10 things on it. There was toothbrushes, there was beds, there was this and that. Would you sign it? And he goes, of course I'd sign it. She goes, well, why don't everybody do that? Oh, that's not the way it works. Oh, okay. I mean, so they know all, both sides know exactly what's needed, but the idea of getting a bill that does just that and both guys signing it is so far afield from, I mean, any American listening to this has got to be sitting there going,
were they from, were the reps from the House or from the Senate?
Well, if they were the Senate, they'd be senators. Duh.
Well, McConnell won't let it get to the floor. That's where we are now.
Well, this is the House.
Things I'm passed by the House.
Okay, but I'm saying,
they have to go through that thing. So it doesn't matter what you'll vote for. If McConnell doesn't let it go there, it doesn't go.
Well, I understand that, but I'm saying it is impossible to put a bill through where they could say, look, let's fight about the wall next month. Here's stuff we absolutely need today, and let's just pass it. I mean, it appears that you can't just do that. I mean, look, we're short these 20 items. Let's fund these for, you know, $100 million. Can't do that. Senator Mike Pence gets on there, and all he did was, I mean, if you had taken the training like I did a long time ago, I remember some of it. I mean, there was five things he was going to say, no matter what she asked him. He kept saying the five things over again. Oh, and Donald Trump's presidency is the greatest. This has happened, that's happened. Oh, by the way, it's this great crisis on the border, and it's all the Democrats making because they won't sign this bill. And she's like, what bill? Well, there's clearly a bill. There isn't a bill. I mean, it was really, to listen to the spin from the three people, you know, no wonder Americans are pissed off. I mean, and I tell you what, Mike Pence is an absolute master at it. You couldn't get him off topic with a crowbar. He's only going to talk about his stuff. Well, clearly the Democrats have done this and that, and under the Donald Trump presidency, the greatest presidency was, you know, I'm like, what are you, good Lord. Anyway, that was my Sunday. But I did see a video, Frank, that was pretty funny. I don't normally watch these things.
Two videos, it sounds like, that were pretty funny. One was just very disconcerting.
Yes, well, loves country and Western music, both kinds, I guess, right? So she's got this thing she's listening to when I walk in. She goes, oh, you got to see this. It's a video. And I normally don't, you know, ever since Dr. J, when we lived together on the South Side, used to always have MTV on when they had nothing but smoking hot chicks, right? And now MTV doesn't even have music on it, does it? I don't think, but
no.
Anyway, those days you could actually sit there and watch it if you were a young male. And so they had this guy in this video, and he's a country singer, and he's pretty good. He's talking about how life can make a change, and how he's got this, and he's this kind of dumpy looking dude with the big beard. You know, he looks like he was lived on the, you know, the Redneck Riviera or someplace. And of course, his girlfriend comes in on a Sunday morning, and he'd had a party with his buddy, so she's like tripping over bodies. Every sofa's taken with a body. She comes to the bedroom, and here's this guy face down, like across the bed, right? Totally passed out. Like one of Matty Weber's parties before he met Jill. And, anyway, so then she's all pissed off, and she says, all right, I'm out of here. And he goes, all right, see ya. Then he heads to the gas station to get some beer, and of course, he wins $100 on a scratch off, right? So he buys even more beer. So then he calls in like the fourth caller to a radio station and wins like this wild weekend away for like six on the coast. So the next thing you see, you know, he and his buddies all out on his big yacht fishing and doing. And then he wins something at a golf course. So they're all out playing golf, him and all his fat buddies. I'm like, and then the moral of the story was it all started when the girlfriend left and the curse of the mother-in-law got away from him. And all of a sudden good stuff started to happen. You know, it was done. So, of course, now he's not the smoking hot new girlfriend that's a waitress from someplace. And then meanwhile, the other girlfriend's coming back, like putting notes sorry in the door with champagne. And of course, he's not there because he's out on the yacht in the Gulf. Whoever put this thing together was pretty clever. Anyway, I needed to laugh.
Were the guys wearing the wife beater T-shirt and the cutoff?
No, they were doing the shorts, just the regular
golf course.
The regular T-shirt. Well, no, they actually were sort of dressed up like they just gone on the pro shop and like outfitted themselves, new clubs.
Oh,
and
that's
everything.
Pretty good.
Yeah, that was pretty good. But anyway,
I only know that outfit because that's how I used to play in South Bend.
Well, that would work in South Bend. Yeah.
And you actually only wore that shirt on the first, 9th, 10th, and 18th hole.
Well, that's we actually are playing in a golf outing today. We're the Marist Legal Group, all the lawyers from Marist are having a little golf outing actually at Olympia Fields of all places. Assuming we don't get rained out, but we might. One of the guys, I should know his name, picked up the tab for the whole thing. So when they sold the foursomes for everybody, which our man Greg bought one because he's an attorney from Marist, all that money goes on right to the school. So there's no cut out at all.
Did you go to Marist?
Yeah. So it should be fun.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun.
So then they give you the huge, what you can wear at the country club. Name me somebody who has a pair of shorts or a pair of pants that aren't like some cargo pants if they're casual now. Not supposed to wear those. You can't wear...
I do because I'm married to a woman that will always, if I'm going out in public, she edits what I wear.
Ah. Well, then you can't wear your golf shirt outside. You know, it's got to be tucked in. Well, with our group, I have a feeling past the first hole it's going to be. the group's a little bulky, if you know what I mean. Anyway, so it should be fun. Last time I went to Olympia Fields, I had an interesting... Out of all the places I get a lecture on U.S. politics, Frank, we were a guest of actually a former priest, of all things, and he was a teacher over in Asia for a long time. And he says, after about 12 drinks, he says, you know, if you live in America, it's the world's greatest country. If you live outside it, you can't help but hate it, because outside the country, all it is an arm for your big companies, both the military and everything else, and policy. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with 20 big companies trying to make money on everybody else. And I'm like, really? And evidently, he was teaching economics somewhere in South Korea, and he got to the section on labor unions, and he claims a couple guys from the CIA showed up and said, we don't want people teaching labor unions over here.
Whoa.
Yeah. You know, see, you hear these things and you wonder, first of all, why would anybody make that up? I mean, it's not something you would, you know, lie about. Because why would you even think of such a thing if it didn't happen? right? I mean,
exactly.
That's not one you'd. That's not one you'd make up. But all right, so we've got. We're starting to do more. Well, then the other part of the Face the Nation thing yesterday was grilling people about what have the sanctions accomplished, and the guys are saying, "Well, we're just trying to somehow we're trying to bury the country economically, so that they revolt against the people that are there, and then we're going to help them revolt." And she says, "Wait a minute, is that like a plan?" Well, it's, you know, we would help them out. And I'm not sure, Frank, I don't know, if somebody were to do, now of course we would never do this in today's politics. I honestly don't know the answer to this, but I would try and ask three or four people who I think had a brain cell together and say, give me a list of the last, however many times it is, going back 200 years, where somebody essentially put huge sanctions on somebody, and what were the effects? And did they really help out? Or did they just make the people that you were supposedly on your side hate you more than they did before? Or hate you when they didn't hate you before? I have no idea. What do you suppose the answer of that, you know, shall we say, PhD paper or two would be? You think the Iranian people like us more or less since the sanctions?
I think they probably, when you're hungry, you'll hate whoever the primary source of the hunger is, and where do you place the blame? And then I'm concerned about our ability to affect regime change, because the last time I checked, Maduro was still running Venezuela. How'd that work?
What about this guy losing this big election in Turkey?
Erdogan?
Yeah.
That's amazing. He didn't lose, did he?
He
was mayor of Istanbul, which is 20% of the country. And in the March election, his guy lost by 15,000 votes and refused to accept it, the result. So they had a rerun, and his guy lost by 750,000 votes, like 56-44.
This is the mayor of Istanbul spot. Because Erdogan's now the president, right, or whatever, dictator.
No, it was for mayor of Istanbul.
Okay,
but his party got smashed, and Erdogan has said, "As Istanbul goes, so does Turkey." So this is a big deal.
An
ex prime minister is going to announce today that he's spinning off from Erdogan's party.
Well, so what exactly will title does Erdogan have?
I mean, he's either premier or president of the country. I don't know the exact title there.
Well, I mean, I know
he runs the place, and it appears that he has nearly unlimited power.
Yeah, it sure does. Well, I mean, I know my basketball buddy claimed that the people in Croatia or Serbia, where we had the sanctions on, he said all it did was make the people at the lower end who got hurt by him, not like Americans. People on the top end, he said, they still live fine.
Well, and it looks like people are starting to salt away money. I mean, we've seen Bitcoin go from what? The mid-threes up to the mid-nines?
And gold went from...
was at 1280 forever. What is it today? 1410?
Yeah, and I went from not being able to get the thing to move to chasing calls, but... But that's all right. It's a nice chase because everybody's up a bunch of dough. Finally. Hey, it was, you know, I read something, what you learn every day. I get this, thing in one of my emails where they send me, like, you know, a thought of the day, history thought. Speaking of sanctions, I didn't realize, I didn't drag it with me, but, after World War I, they said one of the nastiest things that anybody did during World War I, I didn't realize that we, meaning the Allies, or whatever they called themselves, the World War I, even though there was an armistice and the fighting had stopped, that we kept the naval embargo on Germany, and how many people starved between the time the shooting ended and the Versailles Treaty was signed, and the incredible hatred that embittered, according to this guy anyway, left an incredible fertile field for Hitler to come back at the people who did it. I had no idea we did that.
And the Germans in the United States supported, you know, a return to German nationalism because of it.
Yeah. Well,
because their families were starving. There were marches here in DuPage County, massive marches in Milwaukee supporting the German government. You know, it's painted as supporting Hitler, but it was supporting German nationalism.
Well, the allegedly, you know, hundreds of thousands of people starved after Armistice Day because we kept the, well, we, the Brits and the French, kept the naval embargo on. Why would you
that?
Ever
was
do that?
One thing Harry Truman or Roosevelt / Truman learned, and as a result, we ended up with the Marshall Plan. Get things humming again, food and work.
Yep. Well, they, you know, we had a, boy, Maddie Weber will know when. We had a lady on the show. Well, I hope she's still with us, but I would guess maybe not. She was a guest. She actually worked as a young girl for Marshall when they went from town to town. And I remember her asking her specifically, what were these towns like? She goes, they were hell. There was nothing but riots. There was no food. People fighting in the streets. She goes, it was horrible. For however long it took to get that rolling, it was absolute anarchy. I mean,
there's some very interesting studies, economic studies done on the barter system that arises in that sort of environment.
Speaking of which, are you shocked and appalled, or whatever, just plain shocked at the incredible? When did Bitcoin When did the guys from Facebook, you know, pop this idea out for the Libra? Like a week ago or 10 days ago, maybe.
Yeah.
Every committee of Congress, the Treasury, everybody is all over this thing about, oh my God, what do they think when you start making the currency of the U.S. something that all people can do is peer in everybody else's underwear? I mean, you can't transfer it, you can't use it, you can't. Well, you can, but I mean, why don't they think that somebody would want some other, like you're talking about a barter system? Why don't they think that there's some way that people don't want everybody to know what they're doing? I'm not talking about crime either.
No, we're talking about what historically had been called the gray market.
No, we also talk about freedom.
Cash transactions that are not recorded, and now it's down to 10,000 that I'm sure they have. I think everything's probably reported to the government now. If you did 5,000, you know, again and again and again, they just say you're trying to avoid the $10,000 reporting fee. I don't trust that.
Since
not
when?
That I have that much money. But
let me ask you this, because Lou and Brennan aren't here. When did that become a breaking of the law? If somebody comes out and says, well, here's a regulation that if somebody takes over $10,000, you got to report it. How does you or I, doing 5,000 3 days in a row, how are we breaking a law because we're avoiding essentially something that's not even a law? It's a regulation. How does that?
I have no idea when it started, but it's. I mean, they wanted to get rid of the $100 bills because of this, and I believe it came because of the war on drugs. It was a war, part of the
but that is such
anti-laundering process.
That is such BS. What percentage of the transactions, $100 bills, you think are in drugs? 1%.
Well, it's interesting because I've read studies of cocaine residue on $100 bills, and it's an astounding.
Well, that's because
percentage.
People use
maybe
them,
Maddie or
people use them.
The man can look it up, but it's amazing.
I got a great Coke story for you when we get back from break. SP Futures up 5.25. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities. They play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now, right now. Hello, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber and Jack Silverman on the board. Mr. Frank Fahey with us. S&P futures up 5.25. NASDAQ futures up 18.75. We're now, September is the front month. We went off to June on last Friday. So, if anybody's looking, you have to look at the actual spoos, the September of the U's. Dow futures up 51 over in Europe. We've got the DAX down 73.6%. FTSE unchanged. Gekharana down 7. I wonder if the FTSE's closed. Anyway, they're unchanged. Gekharana down 7. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 27.1%. Shanghai up 6.2%. Hang Seng up 39.1. So up across the board over there, but very marginally. Oil, West Texas up 37 cents. And we got Brent down 8 cents. So that spread is now, we're down to $7. Wow, $7.30. That spread has made a tremendous move from like 10.50 in about a month. RBOB gas up 1 cent, $1.87. A stock or a gas which was down 40 cents 2 weeks ago from the week before. It's back up 15 or 20 cents yesterday, so gas is all over the place. Gold up 12.50, 14.12. Silver back up over 15, 15.36, up 7.5 cents. What do you guys got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. What's with this weather? Maybe I'll play golf or not.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. The sports weather traffic update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probability. Is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Off to a great start, Chief, on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, but the rain hasn't started yet, so when that starts, it could get pretty nasty out there, because we do have showers on and off throughout the day today. But off to a pretty good start. You'll run into some brake lights out near O'Hare as folks are heading out to airport on the Kennedy, and so that's our reddest spot on the traffic map this morning. No issues on the Edens, though. Eisenhower and Stevenson traffic building, but nothing out of the ordinary there. Southside expressways are looking good. Suburban tollways are all quiet. Only accident in the area is actually downtown Randolph at State Street. We have a crash, but everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, as I mentioned, lots of clouds, humid temperatures, and rain on and off throughout the day. A high of 78. Right now it's cloudy and 70 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 103. Right now it's clear and 72. In sports, Cubs were down 3-2 in the eighth with two on, and Javier Baez up 0-2 count, and he crushed a three-run shot to right field into the bleachers, and that completely turned the Cubs' weekend around. They were on the precipice of losing 3 out of 4 to the Mets, who are below 500, and that would have been a bad series at home, and splitting with them feels a lot better after that home run. So Cubs beat the Mets 5-3. White Sox lost in Texas, falling to the Rangers 2 out of 3 in the series. They lost yesterday 7-4. Diamondbacks topped the Giants 3-2. So as we take our Monday morning look at the Major League Baseball standings, the White Sox are now 36-39, 3 games below .500. They're in third place in the AL Central, but they're 13 games behind the first place Twins, who are playing great ball. Sox have lost 2 in a row and are 5-5 in their last 10, but 13 games back of the Twins. The Cubs are in first place, but it's getting tight in the NL Central. Cubs are 42-35, a half game up on the Brewers, who are 42-36, and 2 up on the Cardinals, as the Cardinals have been playing much better baseball of late. So Cubs in first place still, but barely. Meanwhile, the Diamondbacks are 39-40, 1 game below .500. They're in third place in the NL West, 15 games behind the first place Dodgers. Chief.
Hey, before we lose you, or you dash off to put your feet up, whatever you're doing over there. Hey, what's the story with this, two things? The Hawks, the second round pick's gonna play college for a couple years. First round pick, we don't know, or we're looking.
I think most hockey players do that, don't they?
Well, if they're from the U.S., yeah, out of high school. But if you're, well, a lot of these guys take 1 year off, they play junior hockey for a year in Canada, and then they go to college. I don't know why they do that. I don't know if there's insurance policies involved or whatever. You would think there would have to be. I don't see too many guys get hurt forever in hockey, though, like in football. You know, so maybe it's not as important. Anyway, the second question regarding, since you're our tech guy, why?
What was your first question? I didn't hear it.
Was about the Hawks, who their first round pick was.
What's his name?
Yeah, and does he have to go to college?
Okay.
Second one is when I did a tour of, I've been to a couple of them, ethanol plants. This is interesting, Frank, isn't it? The question was asked of the owner, manager, whatever, the ethanol plant, can people operate it from home? And he said, no, we want no part of the internet. We don't want anybody being able to access things, hack their way in and open up like some valve and burn the place down or something. So if you're working on this, you've got to be here. And they had these 3 or 4 big, huge, you know, computer stations with screens, and then he goes, and every valve in the place, and it looked like inside of a battleship, for God's sake, can be opened from those computers and closed. And it was a big, huge facility. Now, why exactly would some sort of a, in Iran, of all places, why would somebody's nuclear, whatever they're doing over there, dastardly deed, why the hell would that be, would anybody have that accessible from the internet? What am I missing here? Why not just have a closed system? Any of you there?
You asking me that? I have no idea.
You're a tech guy. You're
is any system truly closed?
Sure. Why wouldn't it be? You know, you don't. You want? There's no working from home. There's no hacking in and going in from the outside to see how you can get in. You have a closed system.
Yeah, but if you have to upgrade valves or software, I sold the laboratory system for all of ComEd back in the day when I worked for Digital Equipment. And I know what it was like 30 years ago. And it's never really closed because somebody like EG&G Ortec may come out with a new valve or a new instrument. And you have to upgrade the software or load new software for it to interface your system. So they get in a number of different ways.
So you're always connected.
I understand it that if somebody comes up with a new piece of equipment that you're going to somehow control from that board, that there has to be software that allows you to do it. But I'm saying I don't see why you have to be connected to a phone line where some other guy can get in from outside. There's no doubt that if somebody, you know, hacks that piece of software, they can do some dastardly damage. But you'd have to do it. You couldn't do it tomorrow. What I'm saying, you have to have already done it.
And I wouldn't be surprised. Medi could probably address this, is if they could come in through electricity. I mean, we have Wi-Fi in houses that are distributed over your electrical lines. It seems like you might be able to load software, backdoor it that way.
Well, everyone's connected to the internet, so you can always hack somebody's system if you really want to. It's just a matter of having everything protected, and you know, especially your sensitive information. I was looking up the hockey guy, so I didn't hear the gist of your question.
Well, I'm saying, like I said, I went to two of these Fentanyl facilities, and the guy made a big thing is, no, you can't access it for home. You can only access it for those four spots. I don't want somebody saying, I got to go work at home, and all of a sudden some valve starts opening when the hell's open.
Yeah, I think some places probably do not allow people to dial in via, you know, VPN working remotely. I'm sure some places with sensitive, in sensitive industries don't allow that. I don't know if that company does. Are you asking, do they allow that?
No, I'm saying, why would the Iranian nuclear facility be accessed by internet from here? I mean, just seems odd to me that they would allow it open like that unless, you know, I don't know. That's why I'm asking the question. I don't know.
I doubt anything's allowed, but anyone can hack into anything at any time.
Well, if you can get
to it. If it's connected to the internet.
Right, if it's connected to the internet.
Which everything's connected to the internet.
I just said I was at a place where the guy said, we are not.
So they have no internet in their building.
No, it's not designed so that people could access it.
No, the guy says two.
They'll work around the design. That's how hacks occur when they say, "Hey, nobody can access this baloney."
But over on
I'm with Matt on it.
Well, are you saying they don't have internet? They use typewriters.
They have internet for other stuff, but for their
If you have internet in your building, it can be hacked.
Well, your Symphony system over there can't be hacked.
My what?
On your board, we have one computer that only. It only does your backup stuff,
right? If you have a portion of your environment that is not connected to the internet whatsoever in any way, then that would be protected.
That's what I'm saying.
Like having it on a piece of paper in a file cabinet.
That's what I'm saying. That's what this guy told me about the Fentanyl plant. That you cannot get from the internet to anything to do with the plant. You can sit there in a baseball game.
Well, that should be that would be. An intelligent way of setting up your system.
So I guess my question
is... But you could still hack in and get all kinds of sensitive data to anything that is connected to the internet.
Oh, sure, I understand. But my question is, why would the... If the Iranians are actually screwing around with the nuclear stuff, why would they have that open to the internet? I mean, are they that... I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me that they would be.
Well, they've had to buy equipment from third parties. That came in through... Which is the virus that we whacked them with, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, came in through German hardware they bought, and it was a wireless attack.
Well, that's what I've always, you know, I ask these questions once in a while, not because I know the answer, I answer because I don't know. That's why people ask questions.
So real quick, back to Kirby Dock for a second, who was the number 3 pick by the Blackhawks, because that's much more interesting than what we were just talking about.
Yes, it is.
He was taken number 3 overall, and he is expected to have a legitimate shot of making the opening day roster. He's played the last 2 years in the WHL for the Saskatoon Blades, and that's the team his little brother plays on as well, who was taken 6th overall by somebody, but he's going to play. He's only 16, so he's going to keep playing in the WHL. So Doc has said if he doesn't make the roster, he'll likely return to Saskatoon and play one more year of junior hockey. But if he does make the roster, then he'll be on the Blackhawks this coming season.
So now do they have to pay him next year while he's playing, or hockey's kind of weird?
I don't know how the salary structures and all that stuff work out.
And do these kids in junior hockey go to college or go to school?
Well, the guy from one of the second round picks is going to go spend. Was he Boston College or BU? Maybe for 2 years he's going. The 6'7 guy or 6'6 guy.
BC.
BC. Do they have to pony up a policy, insurance policy, Frank, or do you just go play?
I have no idea how this works. I know hockey does appear to try to do things on the cheap compared to other sports.
Well, I love the fact that the guy came in and was a goalie for a period. That they didn't have to sign him a one-day contract. They could pay him like 100 hours for the night or something.
That is great.
In baseball, if Matty Weber wants to go down and he's a big celebrity and wants one at bat in spring training, don't they have to sign you to full contract, Matty?
Yeah, I think so. But I'm trying to wrap my head around this. If you get drafted and you decide to go to college, or you decide to play, or you don't make the roster and you go back to the WHL, the Blackhawks own your rights, but they're not. Are they paying you? Have you actually signed a contract with guaranteed money?
Well, how can you go to training camp without a contract?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I assume you're signing something, so I assume they're paying you.
Plus, why wouldn't you go to?
And how long is that draft position good for?
Yeah, but if you go to,
if you're drafted when you're 16, is it good when you're 22?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know the baseball stuff a little better. I'll have to look into it, but someone will tweet us in that knows a little bit more about hockey.
Well, why wouldn't he go to Rockford? Isn't that the Hawks minor league team?
That's their minor league team. I don't know. Is the junior league in Canada better than the minor league here?
I don't know. I know some of the guys come out of high school and play 1 year in the junior league and then they go to college for a couple of years, but. That's why when you say the Hawks, you know, everybody's fighting over these draft picks. Well, obviously you'd like to have a nice draft pick, but it's not going to help the Hawks this year. Neither of these guys are going to play here.
Well, it sounds like this kid may play, but he's that good. He's the number 3 overall pick. I mean,
right? But it's not, you know, it's not like football where you get 6 guys that could be on your team on the field.
No, it's not. I'd say it's closer to baseball.
Yeah.
Whereas football and basketball, the great players can play right away. Baseball, that never happens unless, you know, recently, like Bryce Harper played right at 19, but that very rarely happens. You're typically don't even sniff the major leagues until your mid-20s.
Was the youngest was a pitcher, right? 16. Was it? Who the hell was it? I should know this name.
Joe Nuxhall.
Yeah, Joe Nuxhall. He was what? He must
have played in the majors when he was 16?
Yeah.
Yep.
He must have been, I hope he was close to 17, but yeah, he was young. There have been guys.
There was a kid from South Bend back in Tom's era that pitched for the Texas Rangers when he was 17 or 18. Went straight from South Bend Clay to the Rangers.
Well, Kerry Wood didn't last long he was 19, right?
I think he was 20.
When he got here, 20, when he pitched, he pitched that game.
It was his rookie year. His fifth start.
It was like his fifth start.
Yeah, I think he was 20.
Did he go to the minors at all? He must have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was drafted out of high school, and he pitched like 1 year in the minors.
That's always one of the amazing trivia questions. How many pitches did Kerry Wood pitch the day he was drafted? Wasn't it like 120, 140? Some huge number.
He had a lot of wear and tear on his arm from high school, which is a little weird.
He pitched a 7-inning game and he came back and relieved in the second game in a doubleheader. That's bizarre, isn't it? Now I think they certainly have restrictions in college.
I don't know if they do in high school, but they should.
Yeah, oh yeah.
They do in Illinois in high school. You got to protect kids from adults. When it comes to sports, Matty knows.
It's true. Absolutely.
That is the truth. That is the truth. Is Joel going to be in softball tomorrow?
Did Michigan? What did they do?
They're in the finals. Finals. They're game one of the. Was it 2 out of 3? Game one.
It's 2 out of 3. Yeah.
Game one's tonight.
Who are they playing?
I'm not sure. Why don't you look that up? I saw it, but then I forgot it. But they're loaded, especially in the pitching department. You have to be, obviously.
But looks like Michigan versus Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I thought it might have been. It was, Vanderbilt's got a hell of a team too. They came out of the losers bracket. They must have.
Vanderbilt has. I read something that they've produced like more Major League Baseball draft picks than anyone like the last 5 years, or like they're like in the top five or something. I mean,
well, somebody on the Cubs is from there.
Yeah, they've a ton of people have come out of Vanderbilt.
That's those are unbelievable statistics last night about Mike Trout and Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays, weren't they?
Yeah.
Well. Was it 5,000 at bats or 2,000 at bats or something? Whatever the batting average, the home runs, and everything, they're all like almost exactly even, Frank.
Wow.
Yeah. And,
I should go see Mike Trout play then. I saw the other two play.
I never saw either one of the other two play. Every time I went to see the Cubs, seems like they're playing the Pirates, and I had a steady stream of, Roberto Clemente, which was good enough.
So through 1,139 career games, the comparison is Mike Trout versus Willie Mays. Trout, 307 batting average, Mays 320, but Trout 420 on base percentage, Mays 394. So Mays' batting average was 13 points higher, but as far as on base, Trout got on 26 points higher overall. They're slugging. Mays still slugged better than Trout. Mays slugged 595. Trout 578. Hits, Mays had a lot more hits. 1395, Trout 1264. But Trout had a lot more walks. I mean, like a lot more. Mays walked 544 times. Trout 761 walks. So over 200 more walks. Home runs, pretty much identical. Mays 268, Trout 262. Stolen bases, identical. Mays 198, Trout 197.
Do they say how many at bats? I'm going to say Trout said. He plays pretty much every day, but I think Willie Mays played every day.
I'll look at at-bats, but through the same number of games, so I assume the at-bats are pretty simple. It's through the same number of games played.
Well, those days, a superstar never sat, though.
Yeah, but it's games played.
Oh, okay, games played, right.
Yeah, so I assume the at-bats are pretty close. Yeah, I mean, he's on that pace, which is insane to be basically equal with Willie Mays.
Well, and Mickey Mantle, too. They had that one last night.
I'll have to look at the Mickey Mantle one.
They're almost exact. He's interesting. I mean, Willie Mays, my uncles used to say, was the best guy. He was more dynamic on the bases. But other than that, I mean...
Their stolen bases are the exact same.
Really?
Trout and Mays. I just read that.
198.
198 for Mays, 197 for Trout.
That's interesting. I mean, maybe because I saw Willie when he was older, he still tried to be dynamic on the bases.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how good Trout is just because he plays for the Angels, and he's on the West Coast, and he's not like the big West Coast team. He's not the Dodgers. And so people don't get to see him play that much, and so I think people don't realize he is the best player in the world and has been for the last 6 or 7 years, and people are starting to realize he's one of the best players ever.
Yeah. Well, before they had the interleague play, well, they have to actually play here, because otherwise, even if they're on TV, you don't watch them if they're out there. I'm very, well, not overly upset, but I'm really bummed that I never got to see Ichiro in his prime. I don't think I ever saw him.
I saw Ichiro play, it definitely wasn't in his prime.
I mean, he was arguably, if the guy is going for Hall of Fame first ballot,
He will be first ballot.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
and then the Angels came to Wrigley this year for a 2-game series, but Trout was hurt, and so he didn't play.
Right,
and that disappointed a lot of people. But he plays.
Well, maybe you guys should go to White Sox.
Yeah, we'd have to go
and check it out.
Yeah, I like going to White Sox games. I haven't been in a couple of years, but when he's in town, I mean he's worth the price of admission.
What I'm saying, Frank, is you even if you watch the Sox all the time, I mean I watch the Cubs a lot. And I watch the White Sox some, but I don't normally watch the games that start at 9 o'clock when they're out there.
No.
So you could be in Seattle for, on the East Coast. Do you ever see those guys play? I mean, the idea
you've never seen them play unless they come to your.
You can be a baseball, you can be one of those outposts, shall we say? And look how many people spent their entire life. Going to, even if they were season ticket holders, never saw Mantle play, never saw Clemente play, never saw Willie Mays play. I mean, how crazy is that? Before they interleague play. We were so spoiled here having the two teams, you could go see everybody play if you wanted to.
Right.
I can't believe you guys aren't mentioning Hank Aaron in the same breath. He's right up there.
Oh, yeah, well, Hank was...
But it's the same thing. You had to... We were lucky. You could go see people if you wanted to go see them.
There was a picture in... I don't know. I have it somewhere. It was was the 54-55 All-Star game, and they had Ernie Banks, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, and somebody else were standing around, and they... Might have been, I don't know, Frank Robinson, might have been. And they go, boy, how would you like to start the team out with those four guys? You know, that's pretty, I mean, you know, he's totally forgotten as a spectacular player because he disappeared into Baltimore for the last part of his career as Frank Robinson. I mean, I can't imagine a top 10, a serious top 10 in baseball doesn't have him in there. I mean, yet the name is not even there. You know, I mean, there's been so many incredible players, it's hard to keep track of them. I mean, really, but, I mean, he was, you know, triple crown winner and everything. I mean, just, you know, there's been some amazing people when you think of it. And especially in those days, people, I mean, what if Mickey Mantle would have had somebody actually repair his knee or Andre Dawson?
You know, what if he didn't drink a 12 a day?
Right.
Well, you know, there actually was sort of a reason for that, but,
Well, I remember going to games and watching half the guys in the dugout were chain-smoking cigarettes.
Billy Williams used to, yeah.
The famous Sports Illustrated picture of Dick Allen smoking the cigarette in the White Sox dugout is pretty classic.
There was a guy. Boy, was that guy strong enough?
So Len Casper, actually, on one of the Cubs broadcasts recently, started reading Dick Allen's stats and said, there's no reason why this guy's not in the Hall of Fame. I think people don't realize how good he was. And if they knew stats like
he's been blackballed.
Yeah, if they knew stats like they knew now, he would absolutely be in.
Yeah, well, I don't disagree.
He was blackballed because of what he did, his fight against the owners.
Yep. And, well, I thought his was much of a... I don't know, there could have been possibly a more miserable human being. I don't know about human being, but it certainly is a grumpy baseball player. Dave Kingman, for a long time, was he the only guy? Was he 500 home runs or something that wasn't in the Hall of Fame?
He did it without steroids.
He's a huge man. Huge man. I saw him at the Sporting Goods show. He was bigger than any of the football players. At the time, I was, you know, solid 6'4", and he was easily 2 to 3 inches taller than me, shoulders like two of mine. Huge guy. Anyway, Frank, well, we've got you for 2 minutes, bud. What do you make of this week? What do they make of last week's rally? And there's a article this weekend about your buddy Cooperman. Thanks for getting a little bit of rally, and that's it.
I think what we're seeing is devaluation of the dollar, and that's why the asset prices are going up right now.
That's cool. That's because of
the Bitcoin, gold, the S&P 500. I don't know what's going on. I'm wary.
As always,
and that buys me nothing. That means I miss these silly rallies.
Well, my brother watches, because we have clients that are in these things, some of the tips and inflationary expectations. For the first time, this inflationary expectations is going off the chart to the upside. Tips are moving, everything. How exactly is the Fed going to start lowering rates if inflation starts moving up?
Because if Trump wants it done, Powell will do it.
You think so?
Well, then we'll have a new Fed chairman. I don't trust what's going on there. Do you?
That's a dynamic we're going to talk about a little bit with Stephanie Koenig afterward because she knows her Fed. Frank, thank you very much, buddy. You take care of yourself.
Okay.
SP Futures up 6, NASDAQ Futures up 22.50. Be right back with Stephanie Koenig.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, Nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
Right
now, right now. There's something happening. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Al. Mr. Matt Weber, Mr. Jack Silverman on the board, Stephanie Koenig and the phone. SP Futures up 675. NASDAQ Futures up 24.25. I got a quote for you, Steph. Who's this? I like the silent church before the service begins better than any preaching.
I don't know. Who is that?
Ralph Waldo Emerson. He was a character, that guy. I remember having to read that stuff in high school, did you?
No, I didn't.
You never had to read any Emerson?
No, I never did.
Really? Well, see, that's now I know. Now that explains a lot, I guess.
Sure. I don't know. I'm not sure what you're trying to explain, but I didn't read that one. I read a lot of other classics, but not that one.
Yeah, we did maybe a little bit of him. Not much. Him and Throw Gatto was a long time ago. I can hardly remember. So how are you?
Good. Yourself?
I'm doing fine. How's your How's your official helper?
My little helper is doing great. You know, she's growing fast.
She's going to be an adult when she's five, for God's sake. You're taking her everywhere and introducing her to everybody, even people like me, you know?
Yeah, if she could only talk and tell us how she feels about it, then she'd be an active, full active participant.
She was talking. She opened her eyes. She looked at me and said, here's a rookie. I'm not getting anything I need out of this guy, but he's harmless. That was the message was right there. Anyway, what do you you have plenty of time to contemplate. I'm going to lead by saying I don't think I've ever seen more news arrows flying around the market than right now, and I'm at a loss to figure out which one to follow. I mean, what do you maybe not being as close to it now? Are you seeing it more clearly or no?
I'm with you. I'm as confused as I think everyone. I heard you before. I agree. I think the Fed chairman's going to do whatever Trump wants, not necessarily whatever's best.
Really? Okay.
So, it seems clear based on the last time he made a decision and then Trump didn't like it and he went back and changed his decision, that there's some sort of control there. So I just don't trust that the Fed's going to be acting necessarily in the country's best interest, but maybe more in the presidential's best interest.
It seems, Steph, for a while, now this is me being with my monetarist background, that we did things that were, I'm going to say, somewhat questionable. And I'll say, again, I'll be opinionated and say, we sort of got away with it. We had unusual situations in how we count inflation. We had odd things going on with medical stuff and things like that. I won't go into all that, but it seems like right now, if you start pouring, all of a sudden now the reactions that maybe I would have expected many years ago are sort of starting to happen. Well, we might think we're going to lower rates and to where we're going to pour more money into the system. All of a sudden, out of the blue, gold decides, wait a minute, this is a problem, and runs. I mean, why all of a sudden? I mean, we're the most fascinating, I guess, reason why I guess I'm still in the industry other than I like my clients. It's the most fascinating thing is you can see things happen. I mean, when I first started, it was obvious to me at some point when interest rates were, 15% in the bank and 12% in a 30-year and so forth, that they really could only go one way. And the market was around 800. And someday, we weren't going to go to 200, and the interest rates weren't going to go to 50, or else we were going to collapse. So the odds are it was not an even coin flip is when there was a big move, which way the move was going to be, because it almost couldn't be the other way, right? And us survive. But it was I'm going to say, Steph, my first year and a quarter I spent in the business, sneaky long, and never made a dime being long. And all of a sudden, one day, in August, somebody said something. I think it was a guy from Salomon Brothers. And all of a sudden, we raced off, and all of a sudden, interest rates started to go down and really went down for 20 years, for God's sake. And I never quite understood why it was that day, why it wasn't the day before, the day after. I don't understand why the crash of 87 didn't happen on a Thursday or the next Tuesday. I mean, now all of a sudden I've had this gold position, you and I've talked about it over adult beverages, whether it was being early or stubborn, and you never really know, and all of a sudden the thing's up every day, and all everybody talks about is gold. I mean, why this couldn't have happened a year ago, 2 years ago, 8 months ago, 5 weeks ago? I mean, help me here.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't have all the answers, that's for sure, but for me, a lot of this seems to be more like psychology than it does to actual fundamentals of the market, right? So I think some of the reactions and some of the stuff that we get has a lot to do with people just reacting. So, there's been a lot of uncertainty and there's been a lot of questionable or big volatility in the world. And I mean, with Iran, but with all sorts of other things that have been going on. And so I think what's happening now is people are going a little bit back to the fundamentals, meaning the math, because they don't know what else to pay attention to. So, for the last 2 years, everyone was sort of paying attention to what Trump said, and that was driving the marketplace. Well, people are kind of a little getting immune to looking at the tweets and behaving or working with that. So now I think they're sort of, what do they look at next? I think they're going back to the math and waiting to see what happens next.
What the, I don't know if you caught this article this weekend where a guy was talking about the essentially the fall of value investing. And he was thinking one of the reasons, this is a, I'm not big on pronouncing it, Yun Li, that's easy enough, young lady, Y-U-N-L-I, so Yun Li, was talking about how it's very difficult to have value investing. Value investing means that you look at a company and you say, wow, this place is making this, and by the way, their assets are X, and their earnings are this, it should be trading for this.
Right.
And lo and behold, it's trading for less of that, so you buy it, or it's trading for more than that, and you sell it, or something, something. And her point is, if interest rates are so low that there's no penalty to holding, penalty meaning if I wait for Amazon to declare a dividend, I could be making 6% in the bank for those 10 years, so it's very expensive to essentially wait for Bezos to do that or something. And according to her,
you make more money by holding, using your money somewhere else.
And so her point is that the demise of value investing has the market mispriced, essentially. That you, because allegedly high growth stocks, you can wait for growth without it being a penalty. And there's no reason to have a stock that actually has, quote, value today, where you buy it and you get the dividend check next month or whatever. I don't know, it's sort of an interesting way of looking at it.
Very interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? This got merit, at least in economics, right?
What? Yeah. One of the reasons, Steph, is I'd like to have you on, is you have much more of a world view since you've traveled a hell of a lot more than I ever have. It seems like a lot of the countries around the rest of the world are economically are in way worse shape than we are. Clearly, we're trying to do that to Iran. We're trying to drive those guys in a hole. In other places, Italy, if you can find a story about them, they're almost back to crisis stage, aren't they? It's very hard to even find this. I'm gonna have to start becoming a journal political economy guy where they have a chapter like in every country in the world is boring as sin, but at least you can figure out what's going on. Are some of the policies that we're using, that the European Central Bank is using, are we causing problems other places economically?
I mean, the answer is I don't know specifically, but it would make logical sense that we were, keeping interest rates so low and, investment in this country at kind of an easy place or a high place, so there's not other investments other places in the world that could use it. I mean, also, I don't agree with a lot of things that both the U.S. Central Bank, the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank have been doing with monetary policy over the last several years. I think it to Yun Li's point, it drives an unnatural economic balance. And so there are inefficiencies, or the inefficiencies in the market are almost highlighted versus the market efficiently balancing itself.
Well, what do you think? Actually, this is an interesting story. If I mentioned it to you or not, when I was on as a guest on Jonas Posito's show, and one of the questions that was asked was, "Chief, explain the yield curve. Nobody seems to know what the hell that means." Well, and those kinds of shows, people don't probably. And so I explained it. And I said, "Well, let me start by saying, if I borrow $100 from you for a week." Versus 10 years, and this is a business transaction that, we're friends and I need it. How much would you charge me more interest for 10 years or for one day? And she goes, well, if it's a day, I probably wouldn't even charge you, but 10 years, sure. I said, what about 5 years? And she says, well, there's more uncertainty in 10 years. You probably should pay more. Right. I said, so what if a yield curve, an inverted yield curve, it says that if you loan somebody some money for 2 years, your interest rate's higher than if you do it for 10 years or 30. And she says, and we get a bunch of calls come in, That makes no sense. Why would that ever be? So
that's exactly the point, right? And that has happened it's been happening on and off for the last several months.
Well, have you ever seen one that looks like this? Where the near term and the 30 are high, it looks like a big smiley face where the 3 years down, like, right now I think off the top of my head, I'm going to say the 2 month is like 2.15, the 30 year is 2.4, the 3 years like 1.7. Have you ever seen one like that? I never have, which isn't to say that it hasn't been one. I don't even know what that means, do you?
I think it goes back to our earlier comments about the fact that the market is just not behaving economically. You know, factors are influencing the market that are making it behave unnaturally, I will use the word.
It surprises me, Stefan. I guess this happens kind of no matter what. And people just kind of grab it and roll with it. When you listen to what I consider to be intelligent people talk about interest rate policy in Germany, or the EU, let's put it that way. I always seem to think that they run it, which they probably not exactly do, but close to it. What would possess, how do you have an economic policy based on what I consider to be abject stupidity? Why would you ever give money to somebody and when they give it back to you 10 years later, they're giving you less? The whole concept of negative interest rates, I don't say that is nothing I could ever possibly do for a client. How could that ever be good policy?
Right. It's nothing you could ever do for a client and then pay them money for the work that you're doing, right?
Yeah, but I want to build a building, I need money. Okay. You're going to make money on the building? Yes, I am. So you need to lend me $1 million. How much are you going to be back? Well, $990. Well, wait a minute. You use my money so you can make money, and you're giving me less. Well, yeah. How come stuff like this all of a sudden becomes part of the vernacular? It's like if you bought a pair of pants and one leg only went as far down as your knee. And all of a sudden, if everybody did that, that would be normal.
Let's not talk about fashion because it isn't necessarily logical.
Yeah. But if you're actually looking for a pair of pants to be a pair of pants, I mean, right?
That's your logical, you know, but if you're in style, I mean, you know, only one leg of pants is the fashion. So, but yes, agreed on the building example. I don't know why anyone would. In fact, I don't understand why negative interest rates, when I say I don't understand, I don't comprehend why negative interest rates have stuck around for as long as they have. I could understand it for a brief period, you know, when there's an awful lot of money and money's just absolutely too prevalent into the system. But then it should balance back out and you should get back to at least a zero interest rate, if not, some sort of positive.
Why would zero even be? When we come to this, what should happen, I guess, if you're studied at this, you should end up with a bunch of inflation, but not necessarily, Steph. If all of a sudden the demand for money, if there just is no growth, if there's no reason for you and I to get down to the bank, if there's no point in looking and saying, boy, that area could use 10 new houses, and look, there's a bunch of people clamoring to buy houses. Matter of fact, right now, Audrey tells me that there's a lack of inventory in her area. I mean,
there's a huge lack of inventory in Illinois from a housing perspective because, in fact, a lot of the condominiums that exist, condominium buildings that exist in Chicago, are turning back into rentals. They're buying out all the condos and they're making them rental buildings. It's kind of a really weird phenomenon, you know?
Have
you ever known that to happen?
I'm going to say, without any real knowledge of the subject, except for a little bit, I'm going to say one of the reasons for that, Steph, probably is rents have gotten so high, and for some reason the phenomenon in Chicago is that the rental buildings pay way less than taxes, than the combined taxes of everybody, the condominium in the place.
That I agree. However, I think it's also got to do with the fact that millennials are not purchasing lower, entry level properties. So there's no market for $200,000 to $500,000 range.
Well, not that I've ever seen you in, I'll say, a restaurant. I won't even say a place where they serve adult beverages. But you know that one architect dude I talked to at the Club Lago?
Yeah.
He said the amount of these buildings are, is a lot of these kids are moving downtown from the burbs. He said the parents are very unwilling to plunk down the $350 for a condo for a kid. But the one, if they're, especially if their daughter comes downtown, they want her in a nice, secure building with the swimming pool, with the, all the stuff. And they're subsidizing the rent. The kid's paying $1,200 and they're paying, you know, $800 or something.
Well, that explains how they can afford it, because I know when I got out of school, you know, even though salaries have gone up some, there's no possible way I could have afforded to live in any of these nice buildings.
Well,
and I had a good job.
Yeah, you had a good job. Well, I mean, it's, well, back when I was young, which happened, if you were especially a young lady and wanted to move out of the house and live downtown, Steph, if you didn't live within 1,000 yards of the Clark and Division L stop, you didn't live here. And that was it. DePaul was terrible. Bucktown was a disaster. If you didn't live, every stewardess in the world lived in 1 East Scott. They had bunked in a studio.
Yeah.
Because they had the bus to O'Hare. And then, of course, that area expanded a little bit. And finally, you could make it somewhere down the lakefront. Then you could live in some of the houses, the high rise on the lakefront. And then it could have been like 1981 or two where anybody would let a single girl even move into DePaul. You know, I mean, wasn't that long ago.
No. But the city's, whether we believe it or not, the city's a lot safer than it used to be. So,
In terms of being mugged, yes. In terms of being shot, no. I would say.
Yeah, I would say, well, that's true. There are a lot more shootings, no doubt. But even still, I think the city overall, if you look at the number of homicides that occurred 20 years ago versus today, you'll see there's this huge decline. Now, I'm not saying we don't still have a problem. We clearly do. And there clearly needs to be a lot more work to make us safe.
I'm going
to
push back on you, Steph.
Pushing
back at you at this hour of the morning, but I'm going to say that the reason why there's less murders is because they're patching people up. There's just as many shootings, maybe more.
Yeah, that's a very interesting perspective. I wouldn't know the statistics. We'll have to go look.
You know, I just looked last week. You know, how many people, I will go look while we're talking. How many people that are shot die now? What percentage?
Versus a quarter?
It's not even close to that.
Really?
It's
a percentage.
I'm going to say that in 1972, 1975, total shot in this year, 239. Guess how many are killed? No, whoa, that's June to date. Year to date, shot and wounded. Total shot, 1172. How many do you think died?
1172 were shot.
Yep. Which has got to be as good as any year. I mean, that's a lot.
That's a lot. Since you said it was low, let's just say 200.
222, ding, ding, ding.
Wow.
I mean, there's people that they've seen in these emergency rooms two and three times. They know their name, for God's sake.
That doesn't surprise me.
June to date, 239 shot, 35 killed. Last week, 62 shot, 14 killed.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I still think we have a huge problem.
I don't know. Because actually, anyway, how this is all going to land. Because everywhere you look, we're trying to push Iran into a state where we have some chance of war over there. Hopefully, the president the last week backed off of a strike and, he's gaining on us. I keep hoping for the man. I really do.
Likewise.
You've got issues there. You've got China issues. I don't know how he can. I don't know how he's basically fighting a two front war. I don't know if he's got the right
fighting
people.
A two front war. It's like a six front war.
Well, that's
and every
true.
Time, you know, every time something isn't going his way, we get a seventh front or an eighth front. I mean, it's not. You know, this guy likes to shake everything up, and there's fine. I think shaking things up in a lot of ways is good, but you can't shake everything at the same time and expect, you know, there to be people to be able to sort through it, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, I think one thing you do, you learn is the more you read of history, and I don't know if he's a big history guy, but I'm suggesting that, but people react differently. I mean, I don't know if you're a big fan of Eric Lustbatter, but it has to do with he was ninja, white ninja stuff. The Asian mindset is just somewhat different, not better, not worse, just different. They don't react to the same sort of pressures that we do. The same, it's not the New York real estate deal, and who knows what these people from China think of him. You know, he thinks they love him. I don't know. How would you ever know? I mean, it's
societally, it's very different. It's got different values and different structure and different set of expectations.
And from what I've read, they do not react strongly to people. You know, here you can to a certain extent, you can push and insult in a real estate deal or in any other kind of a deal, and then when it's all over, I guess you can go out and have a beer, but the sort of personal affronts don't necessarily work over there in the push. I mean, the arresting of the guy from Huawei, the guy's daughter. I don't know.
Right.
I don't think that flies over in their, you know, in that mentality. I'm not so sure it flies here, but I don't see how all this comes together, and I really think that the market better get over the Fed's going to save it and start looking for growth in the economy. I mean, I don't know if you listened the other day to a CNBC after the Fed meeting, and a couple of people said that the bull case is now totally on the negative, that the worse we get, the more money comes in, the more the market goes up. And
it's about time, because I've been waiting for that scenario. Or at least people to acknowledge that that's where I thought we were for quite a while.
So, yeah, but you can't fall into the trap like I do if somebody agrees with me. I think they're smart, you know. It's not... I might as well go
on. I don't know who was making the comment, so I can't say they were smart.
He's on there all the time. No hero whatsoever, glasses, bright guy, works for one of the think tanks or one of the big... He goes, the bull case is totally negative. Because if we get any kind of growth... Then we want to, if you have growth, then you're going to want to go, you know, you want interest rates to go up, right? Because people are demanding money.
Yeah.
You've got to, he says, but nobody, we don't want that. He goes, but we do want that. The market doesn't want that, but that's what we want. And they're not moving together, which is, I don't know, I think it's an odd world when that happens.
The problem is the market should want it to go up. I mean, for long-term stability and growth, that's what they should, but they've been sold a bill of goods by multiple different people that bringing interest rates up is going to be bad for them. So, I mean, some of this to me is PR versus, you know, and this is why I say I think the market is behaving irregularly.
But if you look, we only got a minute, Steph. I got to do this reading to say, but if you look at the mechanism, which you know better than me because you've been hanging around the Fed guys even longer than I have. The mechanism is you go out and you buy, I'm going to say a mortgage, I won't say that, you buy some bond. You buy $5 million worth of bonds. Okay, so that money is now in the system and the bond is in the Fed's coffers. It's on their balance sheet. Well, the $5 million works its way down. The point, I think, is, and I think maybe you and I agree, but please, it's not trickling down to any loan that you're going to get cheaper. Your credit card bill is not going to go from 24 to 22 or anything like that. At the end of the day, there's money on the table, and it appears over a long period of time to find its way into the market. And that's kind of what people are hoping for. Anyway, Luckbach Magazine. By the way, Steph, you tried this yet? Luckbach Magazine, you should sign up. The Guide to Money and Probability is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. However, Stocks and Jacks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/Jax. Steph, I'd love to have you on when Jeff's here. You guys would, I could shut up for once. You guys would be, because he's a futures kind of guy like you were on the floor and so forth. You guys be perfect together. Anyway, S&P futures up 5.25. NASDAQ futures up 16. Steph, thank you very much. Talk to you soon. Be right back. Stocks and Jax.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know. All while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now, right now. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm tonight, Mr. Ben Weber, Mr. Jack Silverman. We have Mr. David Animal in a second. S&P futures up 6, NASDAQ futures up 22, Dow futures up 53. As we are Well, actually, not much going on today other than doing the, well, that we know of. We're going to put some more sanctions on Iran. DAX down 63.5%. FTSE up 2, call that flat. CAC around down 4, call that flat. Over in Asia, modest to the upside. Nikkei up 27.1%. Shanghai up 6.2%. Hang Seng up 39.1%. Oil up 45 cents. 57.88. Brent up 8 cents. So that spread is now under $8. It's $7.40, which is low as we've seen in like a real long time. Natural gas 2.23, going nowhere. RBOB back up to 188. It went from 205 to 170, back to 188. So it's sort of back in the middle. Gold up $11, 14.11. Silver up 3 cents, 15.32. Anybody got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start here on a Monday morning. Traffic starting to build on the Edens and Kennedy, but nothing out of the ordinary there. Same with the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good. We have one crash in the area. It's on I-80 westbound. Just before US 30, there is a crash that's causing stop-and-go traffic, so expect some delays on the westbound side of I-80 while crews work to get that cleared up. But everything else looking okay out there, although we do have rain in the area. So that could affect things as some showers are approaching. But off to a good start. Right now it's cloudy and 71, going up to a high of 78 with rain and humidity in the area. So keep that in mind. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 103. Right now it's clear and 73. In sports, Cubs split a four-game set with the Mets, winning 5-3 yesterday at Wrigley. White Sox dropped 2 of 3 down in Texas. They fell to the Rangers 7-4. Diamondbacks topped the Giants 3-2.
Chief. David, are you with us?
I'm here.
I made a grievous error here on a Monday morning that, of course, you're going to have to pay for now. I actually looked at the debtclock.org. Because something Steph was talking about made me look at the total tax take in the country. And when I was taking a tax course at Notre Dame way back in the day, the tax guy, Dinkelo, he played football for the Irish. He was a big, huge guy, played guard or something. Anyway, he would say that worldwide the tax rate comes down to being like 25%. Here, even though the marginal rate at the time was like 70 or 90, it must have been 70. He says, it doesn't matter. People got it. There was enough deductions or people cheated enough. He always looked at the amount of money paid. It was like 25%. Where over in Italy, you paid off the tax guy, and in France, something else happened. But he says, the number everywhere was right around 25%. But I was looking now. Our guys, because they keep going back and forth from the state to the federal and the payroll and everything else, we're up to almost 31%. If you had all the taxes paid to people, and divided into the GDP, which I guess is national income, right? National income is probably a little less than actually, but so we're up to like 30%, which is really something. I mean, and all these guys keep talking about more and more taxation. I don't know. I think they're sort of there, David. I mean, what do you think?
I don't really know. I mean, you know, and it's not just the 30%, but then you have to add in, you know, state and local.
No, that's
and
that's
property.
Oh, that's all in there. That's everything. It's all in. The only thing it doesn't.
Oh, that's all in everything.
No, it doesn't cover like you know, parking tickets and that kind of crap.
I really don't know. I mean, I don't have an opinion. I mean, to me, it seems like a lot. But I mean, does that take into account, you know, like death taxes and stuff too?
I took the total federal tax revenue, which is we're now up to $67 billion in tariffs. So the entire tax revenue for the federal government, and I added state and local into that. But the interesting part is if you look at the debt load, this is where I should never have looked. Our national debt, which continues to run a lot faster than anybody in the budget deficit says. As Carl says, we got so much stuff we don't count, evidently. We're up to 22.4, so we're way past the GDP. Remember how we just crossed, it seemed like? Where the debt was, if you add in, there's another $3 trillion of state and local debt, maybe a little more. But get a load of this. Unfunded pension liability on a state and local level, $6.7 trillion nationwide.
Unbelievable. That figure is staggering.
So, So you're really talking about almost $11 trillion on top of the $22. So you're talking $32 trillion in debt or unfunded stuff. So we're almost 150% of domestic product, which puts us, does that put us worse than Japan or like anybody else in the world? And all we do is bitch about Italy and places? About they can't control themselves?
We may not be worse than Greece.
Well, no, but I'm saying it shouldn't be us laughing at them, though, either. We're not that far away.
No, I get it.
I don't.
It just depends on the way you count.
The way you count and your attitude. If you,
right.
If you're on one side of the dole, it's okay. If you're on the other side, not so good.
Right.
But, so, hey, what do you think of, pretty much a huge week last week, and Friday we snuck a little bit on the close, which to me was nothing more than, if you've been long all week, you say, hey, a lot of stuff could happen this weekend, let's lighten up a little bit. I didn't really see that as much of a sell-off. I don't know if you did. And all of a sudden today we essentially have made up what we lost in the last 10 minutes on Friday, right?
Yeah, I mean, not for the day. I mean, the S&Ps are up 5, and I think they were down 11 on Friday, so we've made up about half. But
well, we were down,
no, it was huge for the week. I mean, Russell was up 1.5. It was the weakest one. Nasdaq was the best. It was up about 3.1. So that's, that's a big week.
What do you make of, I was talking about it earlier, and I can never get these dates right. If I did, I'd be very rich. The speaking of which, I gotta tell you about this crazy show I was watching yesterday. In a minute, the it looked like Maddie Weber and the fiance, although maybe not. I give Maddie too much grief. What do you make of all of a sudden? Dan, who sits right next to you, president of PTI Securities, says, "God, look at these tips." The inflation bonds and all of a sudden inflation expectations. And all of a sudden gold in the last 5 days, 10 days, the stuff you and I have been talking about for how long, David?
And we've never been gold bulls until about 2 or 3 years ago, and we've been waiting ever since.
Yeah, and I don't know if that was patience or stubbornness, I don't know which, but all of a sudden...
Well, we just calculated the basket and found that the figures were apparently wrong, let's put it nicely, and said, hey, maybe it's time to be bullish gold.
Well, and then I said, if the thing ever gets back to 24 from 21, 22, where it's been forever, is the GDX or GLD ever got a, half or near above, 1280 or 1300, I'd sell some calls against them, and all of a sudden, God bless it, I'm chasing the calls. So now it won't stop every day it's up. I mean, what the hell? I mean, just sort of crazy stuff. But I could see you doing this. There was this young couple. Audrey watches all these wacky channels because she's obviously being in the real estate business. She wants to watch all the ones where how much, prices are selling on the ocean front and how people are looking at interiors, so she get a view of, what young people want to see in kitchens. Because you learn a lot from those shows if that's your business. Well, this one was That's over. It's these people are buying yachts, and they got this couple on there from buying their first yacht. You know what, David? I don't know what possessed me to watch it. I'm sitting there going, "This is unbelievable." I'd love being the guy who was selling the yachts. The first one, it is so classic in selling. They sit down and they're thinking, "Well, maybe they need something 55 feet." Well, of course, the first one they show them is like 56 feet. There's never going to be a 55 in there,
Right.
And then the next one's like 65. This thing is. And of course, the husband and the wife, he's an entrepreneur with nothing but money, and she's a fashion model. Like, go figure, right? And, I mean, this is right out of central casting. They do have a couple of kids, but now they're
still a model.
Yeah. She's pretty sharp. And so they're looking for the boat that they can party on because they're from Miami and that's what you do. That's what you party. And they must have said that 5 times. That's what we live for. It's the party. And I'm thinking, wow, this Chicago's not, well, I guess I can be, I suppose, but, and so of course then he's looking for like 3 staterooms that are huge for all his buddies. And she can't stand any of his buddies. They're just a bunch of drunk college friends of his, and if she get rid of all of them, she'd be happy. I'm thinking, this is all coming out in the show in 20 minutes. And I'm thinking, what's the over under on this, Merrick?
Yeah, really.
Anyway, the one for $2 million bucks was nice. Just saying it, Ed. They have a joystick maneuver when you dock, so all you do is point it where you want to go, and the maneuvering thrusters take you wherever you want to go.
Wow.
Man, I don't know any of this stuff. You know, man, I would. But of course, he really wanted a sailboat. She didn't want a sailboat. I don't think they were going to end up with a sailboat. But
I mean, I know nothing about boats, zero. But I mean, I've been on them, but probably a decade ago. I would be surprised if they didn't have like a lot of this self park stuff.
Well, yeah, if that's well. I mean, if you got a big enough boat, you have the thrusters on the side.
Right.
You don't just have the two props because
right,
you got to
right,
know what you're
right.
doing to do that. So I mean, those things you just. You know, you just get next to the dock and you hit the butt thrusters and it moves you over to it.
All right, so it has a feature of that.
Yeah, it has some of that stuff. Anyway, but one of them was 100 feet long. And so you learn something. This one couple gets on, they get this 103-foot boat. Yacht, I won't call it a boat. You know that if you charter it, no matter how big the boat is, you can only have 15 paying customers, 15 or 12.
Wow.
See, now, this is stuff we wouldn't know, David. We're spending so much time with our clients, you know, we don't have time to get on our yacht. You know,
yeah,
I hate
yeah,
it when
yeah,
that happens.
Right.
All right, so does the Fed, if gold and these other inflation things are doing what they're doing, and Europe is going down, well, they're doing the amount of people saying we need to lower interest rates just so we can get on to Europe's, is a negative rate even something that makes any sense to anybody, and why would we follow that? Plus, if we lower rates here, does that mean we're fine or what?
I have no idea their mindset. If you looked at the way they broke it down, I think, I can't remember exactly, but I think it was seven Fed folks, you know, wanted at least one rate cut, one wanted two, or a couple wanted two. Then there was a few neutrals, and one wanted a hike. I don't have any way of knowing what their mindset is, nor does anyone other than maybe some leaks know what the, you know, intervening data is going to show. If you put a gun to my head and said guess, I do not think that they're going to cut 50 basis points in July. I have no idea September. My guess is that they would cut, you know, 25 basis points in July, and then, you know, maybe shift the language to a little bit a touch hawkish, like we're on hold for now unless something gets, you know, much worse, and we'll see. I mean, that's my guess. I have no way of knowing.
You think the let's put it this way, wavering under the heat from the Oval Office or not?
No, I don't, but I do think that they're certainly wavering to an extent. They're certainly very vigilant on the futures markets, and the futures, especially T-notes and bonds, are to an extent forcing their hands.
Why, two questions. I'm looking at the yield curve here. Why, I mean, the guys that are on, it's easy to poke fun at people. Obviously, if somebody listened to me, it'd be easy to do it too. But, why the people who look at inflation, and I will say there's one thing that I think I know something about, David, because I went through it. It working for a firm that's essentially dealt with it at Pullman, with the inflation clauses in certain contracts and in some of the contracts we had for cars and things like that. It's a big deal to start monkeying around with inflation that actually becomes entrenched. And yet when I hear some people talk, one guy was saying there can be no inflation with, you know, well, gold's going up now, but with oil where it is, corn and soybeans where it is, in his mind, it's totally commodity-driven. And I'm going to say that's the biggest bunch of crap I've ever heard, David. I mean, how does somebody...
No, it's monetary, and it's, you know, it's not just commodities. I mean, that's a factor, but also... To an extent, unless you look at the futures, and even if you do, you know, are they looking at the back end of crude oil? Are they looking at the back end of soybeans or whatever? I mean, I don't think that they are. And I mean, you know, 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, crude oil looked like, you know, it was going to go into the 40s, and you had a technical breakout that now looks like minimum 60, maybe even 65. So, I mean, you know, it fluctuates big time each day. I mean, we've had days where crude oil moves 4% in a day. So, I mean, just to say, oh, well, crude's 50, you know, 55, and, you know, was pushing 70, you know, and threatening 80, you know, that's hindsight.
Well, and then you'll hear the next person will say, well, unless we get wage inflation, I don't know that that's... But what I remember about the early part last time, because I was young, I'm very aware of the latter part. And I honestly think, David, that people are only remembering the latter part, the Volcker years. And yet, that's only half the story. You know, I mean, I think you'd have to be, what, 75, or that old, maybe not quite that old, to really understand the entire history of it, going all the way back to, I mean, we're like, if you were...
Older, but let's put it this way. To only remember the Volcker years and shut out the Greenspan and Bernanke years, I don't blame the person.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, I mean, I don't recall, I mean, I was, you know, I was in high school at the time. I don't recall the, you know, going off the Bretton Woods where you went off the gold standard to pay for the Vietnam War and the initial increase in the money supply essentially buried us. That was way before anybody even knew what inflation was. And it was already coming our way, right? And if you didn't have Milton Friedman running around Washington telling them that they were the ones that were causing it. But I do remember the oil embargo when I was in college. And if you saw a station open, even if you had three quarters of a tank, you pulled in, right?
Right.
I mean, and everybody just blamed it all on that. And, we're gonna pull oil out. But then all of a sudden, the fact is, it goes to the weakest spot. It's almost like it's like a staph infection in your body, right? If you got a bruise, that's where the staph infection goes, right?
Right.
I mean, it took a while to percolate through. Then everybody said, well, it's not really the food that's going up. It's the gasoline in the truck that delivers the food. And you go through this whole routine. So finally, it becomes pervasive. But now this time, it's odd to me, David, because it's there, but the people who rail that it's not there, they're not totally wrong, which is weird, because in my mind, and I'll run this by you, is it's the reason why it's sneaky and pervasive, it's been in two or three spots. It's been in medical care, it's been in tuition, and to a certain extent, it's been in fees and taxes on the local level. I mean, so, and you
yeah,
never...
Yeah, but that's also a reflection of property.
Well, what I'm saying is, it really is in... If you take somebody... I mean, this never would have happened in 69 or 70, where you would have said, okay, David, you're paying $800 a month for medical, it's now $2,000. And you sit there and go, well, wow. You know, well, of course the other stuff you buy is your demand for everything else is going down because you don't need money. Because it's a big chunk out of you. And then when you don't raise the percentage there to something else, how many TVs per year does a guy or family, it won't just be a guy, because a lot of ladies run families these days, how many TVs and new suits and stuff did you buy when your two kids were in college and you were paying tuition? I'm thinking you were out of the market for just about everything. Just saying.
Yeah, but I don't know. And that, you know, I think that really goes to the mechanics of how you measure it. Because I still say that okay, the gasoline fluctuates up and down, so you can't, I mean, it just depends where you're measuring from today or tomorrow and where you're measuring. Are you measuring 4 years ago, 8 years ago when crude was $8 a barrel or when it was, you know, over 100 a barrel? I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but other than that, if you take crude oil or gasoline out of the equation, I don't know of much other than large screen TVs and, you know, PCs that, you know, are lower in price. I don't see it. I
mean, they're way lower.
Take cattle, for example.
They're way lower in terms of what you're paying for them in terms of quality than 15 years ago.
Right, and that's the other thing. Okay, so you can buy a 65-inch TV for maybe you know, $900,000, but you want the ultra high definition and the 4K and all the apps built in and the this and the that, and all of a sudden it's not 900. If you want the real upscale one, it's 1700 or more. But that aside, cattle, for example, you know, not that long ago, a few years ago, cash cattle was 160. Now it's 108.
Yeah.
What does a New York strip cost in you know, Mariano's? $13, $14.
It's probably higher. Yeah.
Yeah. It hasn't shown a 30% decline. So where and oh, by the way, you know, years ago they took that out of the basket because when it went to 160, nobody will eat meat anymore. Really?
Well, I mean, that's but what you're saying. Look at it another way. I'll say it for you better, David.
Yeah. Well, I'm all open there.
The better or differently is that you've driven up the lease of the Mariano place and the price of the property,
right,
to such a dramatic amount that that what they actually pay for the steak has nothing to do with the final price anymore.
Exactly. So if I'm the government agency that's measuring the price, do I measure that, you know, the commodity, the raw commodity, went from 160 to 108, or do I measure that, you know, what people are paying at the counter is gone from, you know, $8-$9 a pound to 14.
But what I'm saying is, in terms of, we just mentioned this on Friday with Carl, I wouldn't want to be the guy who counts. Because really, for the first time in our lifetime, David, I think that the asset prices and the fact that some of the cities are broke, that the asset prices of, say, you know, we just were talking about apartment buildings, but the restaurant lease in the bottom of the apartment building, okay, is so heinous because of the taxes that building is paying, that your cost of whether it's grocery food or others or restaurant food is gone up, and it has nothing to do now. So if you continue to ignore taxes in the CPI, which they do, that's a big failure now.
Oh, I agree.
But the thing that the pockets of it are kind of what get me, David. Because I mean, remember how many years ago where Walmart had the, how many drugs were $5 generic? Was that
right?
10 years ago or whatever?
Right.
I don't remember. I mean, I'm going to say that you and I could probably name, or if we asked people that are older than us. By the way, the five prescriptions you take 10 years ago, what do they cost you and what are they now? I'm going to say that there's some older couples that instead of being $50 a month, they're now $600 a month.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
So now that is not picked up anywhere. What my point is that for that couple to be paying $600, it doesn't surprise me that the inflation rate in windows and roofs and stuff is down because they don't have the money to buy them. So I mean, the demand everywhere else has to go down because in one area it's going up so fast.
You know what I mean? I get what you're saying, and I agree with it, and I've. You know, I don't take a lot of prescription drugs, but, you know, I'll spend $18 for this, and all of a sudden, you know, I'll get an automatic refill, and it's 60. Well, how did it go from 18 to 60?
David, hold that thought, buddy. Let's talk about that on Thursday. We got a dash. SP Futures up 6. The NASDAQ Futures up 23. Tell you all about it tomorrow morning.
When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.